Welcome to Writes for Women, a podcast all about celebrating women's voices and supporting women writers. I'm Pamela Cook, women's fiction author, writing teacher, mentor, and podcaster. Before beginning today's chat, I would like to acknowledge and pay my respects to the Dharawal people, the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast is being recorded, along with the traditional owners of the land throughout Australia. And a quick reminder that there could be strong language and adult concepts discussed in this podcast, so please be aware of this if you have children around. Let's relax on the convo couch and chat to this week's guest.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Writes for Women. I'm your host, Pamela Cook, and today we have a fabulous guest on the convo couch, Lisa Darcy, who also writes as Lisa Heidke or has written as Lisa Heidke. I'm going to be asking her all about the name change. Lisa is an author who has written numerous books and has plenty to share about her writing and publishing experience. So I'm really looking forward to chatting to Lisa. If you're new to the podcast, don't forget to check in on the backlist and make sure that you catch up. There's a lot there to catch up on. Whether you go to writesforwomen.com and have a look there, whether you go to the Writes for Women YouTube channel, or whether you actually listen on your favourite podcast platform. And just a little request, if you do love any of the episodes, if you could rate or review them wherever you do listen, and that helps others to find the podcast and pushes us up in the ranking. Not a whole lot to report for me this week in terms of my personal writing journey. I have been doing the final edit on Out of the Ashes and Blackwater Lake, which are going to very soon be coming out in print as well as ebook. They have already come out on audio. And I am back to writing the third book in that series, currently called A Place of Her Own, which is a title I think I might stick with. It's the third installment in the story of Eve Nichol. And thank you to all the people who have been listening to Out of the Ashes on audio. You can find that via Belinda Audio and on Audible, and also available on Borrowbox through your local library service. So that's really where I'm up to, and just podcasting, preparing for upcoming workshops, which I'll pop onto my website. Have to update that as well. And yeah, just generally getting on with things. So without further ado, let me tell you about today's guest. Lisa Darcy has a passion for writing fiction about women in their 30s and 40s navigating friendships, careers, romance, and ultimately triumphing over adversity. With several previously published titles under the name of her alter ego, Lisa Heidke, Lisa's seventh novel, Lily's Little Flower Shop, was published by Bloodhound Books the UK in May 2021 and has since been published in France, Italy, and as an audiobook in English. Following on from that, My Big Greek Holiday was published in paperback, also by Bloodhound Book, and that was followed by Should You Keep a Secret? And her most recent release is The Pact, previously published as The Callahan Sisters. Lisa is a creative writing teacher and presents workshops, has been on panels at RWA conferences, GenreCon, Sydney Writers Festival, many regional writing festivals over the years. She also tutors at AWC, the Australian Writers' Centre, and has recently run a retreat in Tuscany, which I will definitely be asking her about. Lisa has a wealth of writing wisdom to share, and I'm really excited to finally get Lisa on the podcast. So let's get on with the chat and talk to Lisa Darcy. Lisa Darcy, welcome to the Writes for Women Convo Couch.
Thank you, Pamela. Thank you for having me here.
So good to have you here. And over the years, I've been watching your career and following your books and everything. And it was fabulous to read The Pact recently, which we're obviously going to talk about today. And you have so much writing experience and knowledge. So I'm really looking forward to sharing that with listeners. Can we go back, first of all, Lisa, and start with, when did you first know that you wanted to be a writer?
Oh, look, I think my stories are pretty common with most writers and authors. At primary school and high school, I enjoyed reading the books and doing the book reviews at school and high school. And then I studied English at university and journalism and ancient history. So that was my bent. Even though, Pamela, I did want to be a vet when I was 15.
Oh, okay. So the love of animals there as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I actually fainted in biology class and came home, and my father said to me, maybe being a veterinarian isn't going to be your path. And yes, that combined with the fact that I was terrible at maths, I think put a lid on it, and I went back to focusing on English and writing.
Yeah, yeah. So did you go into journalism?
No, because I had bad anxiety that I didn't recognise at the time. I think it's gotten progressively worse as I've aged, but at university we had to do mock trials as journalists, mock interviews rather.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just couldn't do it. I could write, I could do all the writing, but I just the interviewing part and having talked to people about trauma and tragedy, and I just knew, I just went, yeah, I'm not going to be able to do this. And back in the day, just didn't occur to me that I could have written for like a travel magazine. It just didn't occur to me. So I went into PR.
Right.
So in my early 20s, I was in public relations that I really enjoyed. And then I got a job with an academic publisher as an acquisitions editor. And I worked with them for several years and then went on to the ABC, managing their ABC centres. And so it wasn't until I had my first child, Josh, in 1996, that I got a job at Packer magazines, as they were in the day, ACP,
yep,
working on practical parenting and bride-to-be.
So you're back in the writing world then, yeah, yeah.
I was there from 1996 to 2000 when I had my third child. So then I had three children under four, and that's when I decided it'd be a good time to quit my day job and write fiction.
Yeah, so you got back to your first love. Yeah.
Crazy.
So how did you go from there, Lisa, to your first publication?
Through a lot of tears and a lot of words. I decided that I would write a 60,000 word Mills and Boone, 12 chapters. I planned it all out. I wrote 5,000 word chapters as it was back in the day, got all the how-to tips on the fairly new internet and completed the 60,000 words, sent it off to Toronto and New York and London and got soundly rejected with that line, first great line, all downhill from there.
Right.
So then I just went back reading at the time, which was Marion Keyes and like Sophie Kinsella and Helen Fielding and authors like that that were writing in the first person. And I went, that's what you love. Why don't you just focus on writing in the first person and see how you go? And obviously I attended writing classes, creative writing classes, and entered competitions and all of that sort of stuff. But it wasn't until 2007 that I got my first contract with Allen & Unwin. And so my first novel, Lucy Springer Gets Eden, was published in 2009.
Okay, great.
When I'm talking to writers and teaching writing, I just say writing is about persistence. Just keep doing it, keep doing. When you think you've finished one manuscript, put it aside and work on a new story. Try to forget what you've done before and work on a new story. So the point of me telling you this is that by the time Allen & Unwin gave me a contract in 2007, I was able to show them three manuscripts that were well on their way. I would say the three manuscripts were about 80% done. And so they were quite confident that they would continue to publish me. And I was just really happy that I'd persisted and kept going.
Yeah, I think you're so right, Lisa. It's all about persistence and determination and just continuing to learn and then evolve and all that, isn't it?
Yeah. So you've got to have a lot of self-discipline. You've got to actually want to write, and for the love of writing and wanting to tell us, predict what the market's going to want.
So you went on to have 5 books published, is that right, with Allen & Unwin? Okay.
Yeah.
And how did you, like, find that whole experience of traditional publishing?
Okay, so obviously I was ecstatic when I got the contract in 2007. I worked really hard to make that happen.
Yeah.
And I pretty much whenever the children were either asleep or at school or at soccer or at dance or whatever they were doing, I was writing. So I was ecstatic.
Yeah.
And the thing I think that a lot of readers don't know is that once that manuscript leaves your hand and the publishers have it, you don't have control. So I didn't have control over the cover or the title or even the back cover blurb to a certain extent. So when I got that cover for Lucy Springer Gets Even, I was just devastated because it was nothing like I imagined.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I told the publisher that. I said, oh, my God, I'm just so upset. But then you're so grateful that you're getting published, but then you're so upset. Yeah. And basically they just went, oh, that's unfortunate, but suck it up, sunshine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Lucy Springer came out, and of course, it was in the bookshops and it was in Borders at that stage, because in 2009,
okay,
Borders were live. The huge thrill to be in the bookshops, and obviously everywhere I went and anyone I spoke to, I just said how in love with it I was.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and several months later, in fact, Alan Unwin came back to me and went, yes, look, we feel that we might have had a misstep with your front cover.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So what they did, and I was absolutely gobsmacked when they did this, they redid the cover. They called it Lucy Bounces Back, didn't edit anything, and shrink-wrapped me with a Jodie Picoult.
Oh, okay.
So I was pretty happy about that.
Yeah. Great to be coupled up there with Jodie Picoult.
And I think, look, the cover's got progressively better.
It a genre thing, Lisa? Was the original cover that they put on, did you think it was not suited to the genre that you were writing in, or?
I just thought it looked YA. It just wasn't what I had expected.
Yeah.
And we had talked covers. So I want to make this clear. It wasn't like I hadn't been consulted at all.
Yeah. It's hard when your vision of it is so out of sync with what they've put on the cover. Yeah.
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 And speaking of aspirational, when my fifth book was coming out with them, it started with a kiss. So I'd had four books with Alan and Arma.
Yeah.
And in 2014, they were getting ready to put together It Started With a Kiss, which wasn't called anything at the time. And they said to me, we are going to rebrand you. We want to make it more aspirational, less chick lit.
Yeah.
Whatever, women's fictional.
That's what it was in the day, wasn't it? Chick lit.
Yeah. So anyway, they said, so Lisa, we're really excited about this. It's going to be aspirational. We're going to choose an aspirational title and the cover's going to be more uplit.
Yeah.
So what they did, they came back to me with the title, It Started With a Kiss, which I think you can't get much more chick litty than that. And the cover as well was a combination of real and illustration and very chick-litty as well. And
yeah,
I'm sure you know that yourself, or anyone who is traditionally published, that, you know, you don't want to make too many waves. You don't want to be a difficult author, because you want the marketing people and the salespeople to go out to the bookshops and to Big W and Target and promote your book.
Yeah, exactly. So we defer to their experience. But
absolutely.
So what happened? You had the five books with Alan and Unwin, and then where to from there?
Then my publisher, Louise Thurtell, left. She'd been with me from the beginning in 2000. Right. She got on so well. And even though I cried to her about Lucy and a couple of other things along the way, but she left and I was just floundering. And Pamela, that's when I sent the Callahan sisters to Alan and Unwin. And basically they went, yeah, if it was anything but tennis, if it was swimming or cricket, we might consider it, but not tennis. I said to them, it's not about tennis per se. Tennis is their job. Like Lucy Springer was an actress. Stella was a librarian. I had to think of coming up with different careers for every new character that came along. And with that book, I really wanted to explore the sisterly dynamic.
Yeah.
And really, it was a matter of going, what can these sisters do together that makes them competitive as well as they're together, but they can be pitted against each other? And I also wanted to include travel. And seriously, I just went, why not tenants? As opposed to being interior designers or teachers or, well, so yes, tennis is their job, but it's so much more than that.
Yeah.
So basically, Alan and Unwin said no to that. I had a lot of, again, faith in the story. I was teaching regularly at the Australian Writers Centre, and for whatever reason, I thought it would add another, I don't know, notch to my bedhead if I would self-publish that and just see what the process was like. So I already had my editor outside of Alan Unwin, who I'd gone through, and she'd edited all of my books before I presented them to Alan Unwin anyway, Nicola
Nicola's very well known, isn't she?
Yeah, so she'd done that process before I presented to Alan and Unwin, and they said no, and I went back to Nicola, and basically the only feedback I got back from Alan and Unwin was, yeah, it's well written, but why tennis? So then through Nicola and another associate of Nicola's, they were able to put it up on Amazon, America, UK, Australia, all of that sort of technical stuff that I couldn't do.
Oh, that technical stuff's a bit of a nightmare. Just say, having done it myself, but like you say, you just, it's another kind of string to your bow. You learn how to do these things, and then, you know, it's a skill that you have. But so that was your first foray into self-publishing. How did you find that experience?
Oh, look, it's come a long way in 9 years, but I really struggled with the promotion aspect.
Yeah.
Book blog, digital book blog tours.
Right.
And I sort of struggled to just find, how do I get a readership? How do I get traction with this? What do I do? Not that I'm blaming any of my children, but I had teenagers who were learning to drive and other stuff going on in my personal life, marriage breakdown, all of that sort of thing. So So it didn't take me very long, Pamela, before I just nosedived and went, okay, this is beyond me. Now, of course, at the time, of course, I'm talking it up, going, oh, yeah, no, it's good. It's good. I'm happy with how it's going. But I wasn't. So I decided to cut my losses. And seriously, it was more than three people who bought it, but it would not have been more than 300.
Yeah. And so this was the Callahan sisters, wasn't it?
Yes. So what I did is I just pulled it and forgot about it. Mm. And okay, all right, let's just move on with that. I focused, I would say, until at least 2019 on teaching and doing manuscript assessments for other writers. Which I've got to tell you, I love.
Yeah, I love it too. Do you find you learn so much about writing through doing that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And with the manuscript assessment, when you're working one-on-one with a person, it's because I can see where they need to improve or do certain things, where obviously with your own work, you're so close to it that, you know, you need some distance. And then I started writing Lily's Little Flower Shop. And at the time we had COVID and I was building down here at Jarrowa. So I knew that I was moving. My kids either finished university or had at least moved out of home and were happy with friends and all that sort of thing. And I'd had enough of Sydney. So I just started writing about Lily, a corporate high flyer in Sydney, who basically quits a job and breaks up with a boyfriend and decides to move to the South Coast where her aunt lives and open a flower shop on a whim.
Gorgeous. Yeah.
Yeah. So the background to that is that her aunt did have a flower shop and she would go down during school holidays to work with her aunt. So Clearwater wasn't so distant to her, but she had to adjust to that whole small community living. People dressed differently, they behaved differently, they weren't like scurrying at 100 miles an hour against the traffic lights to get to work in high rises
at 3 o'clock
in the morning. And that when Bloodhound Books UK picked me up.
Okay, fantastic.
And that was published in May 2021 when we were still going through the COVID years. But again, just loved that. Found the joy again of.
Yeah. And you had those people behind you where you weren't doing it completely on your own as you tend to be with self-publishing. Yeah.
And they were really excited. And I was excited because it opened up a whole new international scene for me. And I'm sure Alan, I'm going to change. But back in the day, they were focused on Australasia.
Yeah, very much in Australia, isn't it, with the Australian publishers?
Yeah, which was quite great. But I just felt with Bloodhound being given the opportunity for that UK market.
And it didn't bother them that it was set in Australia, because you hear all these stories about how international publishers aren't interested in Australian stories.
But you know what? It went on to be published in Italy and France, particularly done well in France. It's got audiobook and being translated, but it's gone through HarperCollins. France have picked it up. So it's doing really over there.
Well, that's fantastic. And have you had just the one book with Bloodhound?
No, because when Lily did so well, they said, what's your backlist like? And I had all my rights returned from Alan and Unwin.
Ah, good.
So I owned everything. And I said, I've got this one, which was Claudia's Big Break, which is about three friends going to Santorini.
Nice.
And so the publisher said, why don't you just completely update that and it'll have a new title. And it will have a whole new audience because it was basically an Australian book and they were really excited because that whole story setting is in Greece and most of it set in Santorini. Even though they were Australians holidaying, they were holidaying overseas. And then that's been translated into Slovenian.
Oh, wow.
I don't know why.
Amazing. There's all these markets out there that you just wouldn't.
Yeah, and all of them have got audiobooks and, yeah, so I just felt that publishing had changed. And bear in mind, I haven't been with Alan Unwin for 9 years and I'm sure anyone listening to this will go, oh, my God, yes, of course we're international, da-da. But for me back in the day, that didn't happen. And certainly there were no audiobooks. So anyway, and that obviously they were really happy with that. And I went, all right, and you know, what next? And so I had the Stella one and completely update and rewrote that to Should You Keep a Secret, which was published in 2023.
Okay, only last year, yeah. So how have you found that process, Lisa, of going back to look at the older books and then updating them? How have you found that?
It just is really interesting because those books were at least 10 years old because I think Claudia came out in 2011
right.
And the Stella book came out in 2013. So, yes, they were being updated and rewritten 10 years later. Technology, so anything they were referring to had to be completely updated. Some of the things that perhaps characters said in 2010-2011 didn't wash with audiences.
Right, yeah.
In 2022-2023. I wouldn't say the essence has changed, but certainly I think the characters are far more nuanced and pop culture references, TV, well, obviously that's Netflix or Prime, or references had to be completely updated.
And did you find your writing style has changed very much?
Yeah, I was sometimes horrified when I was reading my earlier work, just going, oh God. So I felt that I was a lot tighter and punchier.
Mm. It's an interesting process, isn't it? I've done it with two books now. And same. Last year I did a quick revision on my first published book, Blackwattle Lake, because I got the rights back and then sold it as an audio book because it had never been out on audio.
Right. Fantastic.
And just going back to that, I still loved the characters and the setting and the story, but I write more in a deeper point of view now and probably a bit more descriptive in some ways, just different elements of my writing style that's changed, which changes the voice. But yeah, interesting exercise. I always hate going back and reading my own stuff, of course. I think
absolutely.
It's just excruciating.
And I agree with you. That's, yes, definitely one thing with those two books with Bloodhound, that their wounds, for want of a better word, were a lot deeper, that the things that they had carried on from childhood or past traumas or what have you were a lot deeper, much more developed. That's what I want to say.
We've evolved as people and writers, haven't we? So you've had the two books out with Bloodhound.
Yeah, three books.
Now, three books. Okay, yeah. That's right. Yeah. And The Pact is your recent release.
Yes.
Tell us we were talking about the Callahan sisters. So that is the newer version of the Callahan sisters. How did that come to be re-released?
So then I thought, I need to be brave and go and read that manuscript because, Lisa, you had so much faith in it.
Yeah.
And again, because it was 8 years old, I could read it objectively from a distance.
Yeah, so much better when you've had that big break from it, isn't it?
So the way I think I describe it is that self-publishing book that I put out was like the skeleton of the story.
Right.
It just became so much more. It had heart and the flesh and the blood and the everything and the emotion and the depth and the sisters, just why they were so different. I think it's become far more pronounced in this version.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got two sisters. We've got Samantha and Annie, the Callahan sisters, and they're very high-level tennis players. I found it really interesting because I love books about family and relationship, and I'm not an absolute tennis fanatic, but I do like to watch some of the big tournaments. And, yeah, I was wondering, were you inspired by any particular kind of tennis players as you were writing this?
No. For example, the Williams sisters, I wasn't inspired by them. I didn't base Annie and Samantha on Venus and Serena. I read Martina Navratilova's Chris Evert Lloyd, Andre Agassi's I really enjoyed. And then when I came to revisit it last year, I re-looked at those books. I also read Ash Barty's biography, which I really enjoyed, and Rafael Nadal's book, biography. I think I got far more into the psychology behind it.
Yeah.
And so, for example, with Samantha, she's gung-ho and she just goes, okay, we lost that match. It just means we're going to train harder. Instead of training 8 hours a day, we're going to train 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
Whereas for Annie, it was like, we lost that match. I need to step back and breathe. And I can't, it's just relentless. There's no joy, regardless of whether we win or lose. Samantha, you're still making us go out there and just hit the ball and hit the ball. Even when we win, we can't enjoy it because it's always about the next tournament.
And that comes through very much in the story. And you capture that whole world so beautifully, of not particularly with the sisters in terms of parental pressure, but some of the other players that are mentioned and the media attention and just that whole lifestyle of those kind of elite players, which they are under so much pressure. And I think that really comes through in the story.
Yeah, and definitely that aspect of it and the psychology behind it. Again, you find out early on that the sisters mother disappeared, and we don't exactly know what happened to her, but she disappeared when the children were only 11 and 13, and it had a huge impact on them. Like for Annie, she just wants to be loved. She wants to find romance and be loved. And so she's seeking that. For Samantha, she absolutely fears abandonment, like she believes her mother did. So she doesn't want to fall in love. She doesn't want to get close to anyone. She's got Annie, and that's all she cares about, because she fears getting close to people for fear of being left.
Losing them. Yeah. Yeah.
Denham last year focused on that. It was very superficial in the self-published book.
Okay. Yeah. You've really nailed that whole psychology of the siblings and life as at that kind of top level. But what was your decision in terms of point of view? Because something that writers are always interested in. So in terms of telling the story, we've got Samantha, who is a point of view character, telling the story in first person point of view. And there's also little snippets from a character called Zach that's written in third person from Zach's point of view. So what was your decision in choosing those two as the point of view characters?
I wanted a male perspective. I wanted someone who knew the sisters, who was on the professional circuit with them years back, and then he has a knee injury and he retires, but he's still on the circuit because now he's a photographer, and he goes around to all the tournaments because he's part of the media pack taking photos. And I thought it was important to have someone outside who knew the sisters and who could relate to them and relate to them professionally and also as their friend, and just see things from a different perspective, so that readers, just could have a change of pace as well, I think.
Yeah, I think it's nice to have those little kind of vignettes almost from Zach's point of view. And it fills in some gaps where he's able to tell the reader things that Samantha wouldn't know.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Even if it's little things like Samantha and Annie are in a hotel in wherever, say it's London when they're doing Wimbledon, he might be at a bar because he doesn't have to rest. He's a photographer, so he can go out and he sees things that obviously the sisters wouldn't know about.
Yeah.
He's able to provide perspective and to understand why Samantha is the way she is, why so driven, and why Annie is just going, what is this all about? Is this going to be my life?
So there's plenty in there, as you were saying, Lisa, for people who now aren't necessarily tennis buffs, isn't there?
Absolutely. Yes. All right. It would have helped. I like tennis.
I mean, tennis lovers would absolutely love it.
Hope so. But I must admit, thoroughly enjoyed revisiting and rewriting the story.
And this is something we haven't chatted about. You were writing with Alan and Unwin as Lisa Heidke, weren't you? Yes. So when did you make the shift to Lisa Darcy?
Oh, so when Bloodhound took me on, they said I had to change my name.
Okay.
And I'm quite wedded to my name. I've had it since I was born. And I went, oh, no, because I got Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and all of that sort of stuff, as well as just why. And they came back to me and went, we want to rebrand you. This is all brand new and exciting. We don't want Lisa Heidke.
Okay.
You just go, oh, that's a bit hard.
Have an identity crisis.
Look, we had a couple of conversations. So it took place over the course of a week. But then the telephone conversation, and it was basically, no, this is non-negotiable. So I went away and looked at my computer screen and realized that you actually could change your handle. And I went, so bad. See, I just thought, oh, my God, I'm going to have to start with Twitter again.
Yeah.
Unfollow. I'm going to have to start with Instagram. But it wasn't like that at all. And I went, oh, this makes a huge difference. And then basically, Pamela, I went on and Googled author names, and seriously, it only took me about five goes, and then I went, okay, is there a Lisa Darcy? And I was positive. of course there'd be an author called Lisa Darcy, and there isn't. So I was just going backward and forward to Bloodhound, and they went, Darcy, fantastic, do it. So I quickly had to go onto all my socials and also get an email account, and it was just Lisa Darcy author. I didn't have to be Lisa Darcy 50 author.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's easy.
So once I got over myself, I actually went, this is pretty exciting. And that's what they wanted. They want rebrand, relaunch in their international UK, Europe market.
Yeah. And what about the title change for the Pact, or the Callaghan sisters to the Pact? How did you decide on that?
Just through workshopping with my friend Andrea, who's an author and also an editor, who worked on me with the edits of the Pact and actually the books at Bloodhound. And we workshopped them, and I just thought, they've got a Pact. And I really liked it. But I just also thought that it just needed to have a tagline, which became, no one knows you better than your sister.
Yeah, that's
so
great.
Well, as long as I can have that, the Pact, no one knows you better than your sister, I just thought, okay, that works. Seems to have worked so far.
Yeah, brilliant. And it's got a lovely bright cover with the tennis rackets on it, so we get all the different messaging that goes with the cover. It is really good in telling what the story's about.
Look, I hope so. Yourself and other authors, writers listening to this know, you think you're on the right track with the title or the cover, and then you realize when you're doing it, because the US publisher basically said, yeah, okay, you go with the cover and title that you want. And then you go, okay, it's not as easy as you think it is.
That's a lot of pressure, isn't it? Which is the right cover?
So going back to Alan Unwin, I have no doubt that they believed in Lucy Springer's cover at the time. It's hit and miss. But no, I am really happy with the cover and the title.
This one, Lisa, is published by a US publisher, but you have another book coming out with Bloodhound later in the year, don't you?
Yes. So I've just handed that in. And, oh, God, people out there are going to think I'm so slack. But this is a rework, a complete, I would say, reworking of what Kate did next.
Okay.
Yes, I would say 60% rewrite, because Bloodhound looked at that and said, okay, we want this one, but we want it to have big Christmas themed.
Oh.
They went, well, Christmas. And the original What Kate Did Next was written in, the story was set in July, winter. And then they went, no, we want it set at Christmas time. And I went, what do you mean Christmas? Do you mean a UK Christmas where it's freezing and snowing? Or do you mean, they went, no, Australian Christmas.
Oh, fantastic.
Look, hopefully I've pulled it off. But yeah, it was a lot more work than I thought it was. But I'm sure by the time it comes out, I'll be able to go, I really enjoyed the
process. Yeah, yeah. You're a bit close at the moment. So is that coming out under the same title?
No, I have no idea what it will be called.
Okay.
That will be a collaboration between me and Bloodhound, but Bloodhound will have final say.
Yeah. I've never done a Christmas thing, Lisa, and last year I was part of an anthology that HarperCollins put out, writing a novella, which I'd never done before, and I'm doing another one this year with them. And the sales were great. They were really happy with it. So I think people do like Christmas-themed things, which surprised me, because I don't tend to pick up Christmas-themed things around Christmas, but apparently readers do, and I think they also make great gifts.
Yeah. For this one, I had to change a couple of strands just because I thought, oh, it's Christmas. Now, it's still very deep and nuanced, and the characters have developed far more than they were 10 years ago. But just a couple of the themes, I just thought, this isn't going to be appropriate for a Christmas.
Yeah.
I can't win this in a Christmas way.
We've covered a whole lot of things. It's been amazing. Thank you for sharing so much with us. But what advice would you give for people who are out there and maybe who are either submitting their work to publishers that haven't been published before, or maybe they've had one book published. What sort of advice would you give to them about looking ahead with your kind of writing and publishing career?
I would definitely say, regardless of whether it's your first or second or third novel or manuscript that you're presenting, to get it professionally, structurally edited before you submit it. Definitely. And definitely get, if you belong to an online group or you have a trusted beta reader, a couple of people who are going to be honest, not shoot you down, but be honest and give you constructive advice about the manuscript. Because when I've done this several times, presented my work to a publisher that wasn't ready, that was undercooked and hence got rejected. So I think you've got to give yourself the best chance to succeed. Mm. And you really believe in your manuscript and you believe you've got a solid story that you believe probably is going to pick up, then you have to spend the money to get it professionally, structurally edited, because I think publishers are looking for a reason to put your manuscript down and pick up someone else's.
Yeah, there's plenty in the pile, isn't there?
So that first page, that second page, that first chapter has got to be action, crisis, action, book, all of those things. I would encourage you to listen to podcasts like yours, other authors who are speaking to authors who can say, in hindsight, I wish I had done X or Y. And also, Pamela, going back to what we talked about right at the beginning of our chat, is that you have to have that love and faith and determination and develop your own voice with your manuscript. So we've already had one Shakespeare and one Jane Austen and one Marion Keyes or Jane Fallon or Rachel Johns or Pamela Cook. Mm-hmm. What we need is your fresh take on an everyday situation, if that's what you're writing about.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more.
Your distinct way of telling it, you have to develop your own distinct voice and trust yourself.
That trust is so important, isn't it? And it can be really hard to develop, but like we were saying before too, it's about keeping going and being determined, isn't it?
And it's about also when you start out, like, you know, when I'm teaching, I'll get, so maybe the people in the group, half will be determined to write in first person point of view and the other half will be determined to write in third person point of view. So they'll do that and then I'll just say to the group, okay, now switch your point of views and see how you go. All of that sort of thing. So experimenting and just, okay. And the writing is all about rewriting, isn't it?
Oh, yes, definitely about the rewriting. Just before I get to the very final question, Lisa, I have to ask you about your retreat in Tuscany.
Oh, yes.
How was that?
Sick. I loved it.
Is that the first time you've run one over there?
Yeah, I was just very fortunate to be in the right place at the right time when, my friend Anita Heiss recommended me to the organizer who I'd met a few times. And and Mandy and I just clicked and it was excellent. And the women were from all around the US, Scotland, Ireland, Germany, and Australia. And it was excellent. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Stuff dreams are made of.
But your retreat?
I had that great retreat in Tuscany. It was amazing. But yes, Tuscany would be very nice. Yeah. No, it was really great. Nothing better than getting a group of committed women writers together. I just absolutely love it.
People. And the thing with Tuscany too, Pamela, was that some women were working on memoir, working on nonfiction. And a couple were, one was writing historical and then another one contemporary fiction. And it didn't matter because everyone came together and discussed ideas and And honestly, for total strangers, got on really well. It was a really successful week.
Fantastic. Lisa, just to wrap up, because we've taken a lot of your time, but the last question I always like to ask guests.
Yes.
Get my mouth around that. And we have touched on this throughout, but what is at the heart of your writing?
I would say women triumphing over adversity. So I write about women and their relationships, whether those relationships are with their family, their sisters, their parents, their or work colleagues or friends, obviously, or partners, whether it's a husband or living lover or what have you.
Mm.
So there are romantic elements to my stories, but at the heart, they're about women and women's relationships with each other and how they pull through when times are tough.
Yeah, definitely. Very similar to my own, and I love any stories about that. So wish you all the best, Lisa, with the pact. Don't hang up yet because I'm going to go back to a video and just say goodbye, but wishing you all the best with the pact and also with the new release in October. Thank you for being on the podcast.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Pamela.
Thanks for listening to Rights for Women. I hope you've enjoyed my chat with this week's guest. If you did, I'd love it if you could add a quick rating or review wherever you get your podcasts so others can more easily find the episodes. Don't forget to check out the backlist on the Rights for Women website. So much great writing advice in the library there. And you can also find the transcript of today's chat on the website too. You can find details on the website on how to support the podcast through Patreon. And you can connect with me through the website at rightsforwomen.com, on Instagram and Twitter at W4WPodcast, the Facebook page Rights for Women, or find me and my writing at pamelacook.com.au. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. And remember, every word you write, you're one word closer to typing the end.